Emergency officials say they expect more calls today as a scorching heat wave lingers into the West. Authorities say one man was found dead in his unair-conditioned home, and more than 40 people were hospitalized in Las Vegas for heat-related symptoms. National Weather Service forecaster Bruce Terry.
We're dealing with temperatures 115 to 125 degrees under full sun. Very dangerous. It's recommended if you don't have to go outside, stay indoors, stay in air conditioning.
It was 122 degrees yesterday in Palm Springs, California, 119 in Phoenix, 115 in Las Vegas. 1,000 soccer-playing robots from 40 countries are in the Netherlands for the Robo Cup. Its goal is to beat the Human World Cup winners by 2050. And create technology along the way that will have applications far beyond the world of sports. There are a number of different classes in the competition, small and large robots, humanoid robots, even virtual robots. I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Everybody get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under $20. Because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the food and wine variety show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Yeah, I may be cheap, but I'm on the radio. Welcome to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We have a great show. Two of my favorite chef human beings happen to be with us today. One of them is
Frederick. You could offend a lot of people by saying
that. Didn't say they were the only two. Trudeau, but it happens to be the case. Frederick Depew, who is the chef owner of the new Azure, and Francesco Amadeo is in with him from Don Ciccio e Fili Italian Liqueurs. And Francesco helped design the cocktail program at Azure, and they're in to talk about that.
Well, and unless you're living under a rock, then you would know that Fabio Trabocchi is going to be opening up Casa Luca.
Oh my God, it's such a foodie thing to say. A lot of people wouldn't know that, but now they're listening.
Well, now they know. July 5th, Casa Luca is going to be opening up, and Fabio Trabocchi is coming in. He's going to tell us all about his La Marque-style restaurant. Okay? You want me to do the next?
Yeah,
okay, so later in the show, hold on, this mic is too high for me. Later in the show, we're going to be talking with two people who are really involved with bringing the food from the farm to your table. We'll be talking to Jim Epstein of Blue Ridge Produce and James McCorder of Coastal Sunbelt. Coastal Sunbelt is one of the area's leading food distributors, and they're in to talk about their partnership and how they work with local chefs and how they bring food to markets and the whole thing. I'm really excited. I think it's going to be a good conversation.
And despite the fact that he got cremated in a chef competition last night by Scott Druneau.
Cremated? That's not nice.
Well, that's what Druneau wanted me to say.
Oh,
so.
Well,
he paid me $10.
I'm
Why
sure
the hell would
listening.
I not say that?
I got 12.
Victor Albizu's in. He's one of DC's top chefs, and he's actually one of the sweetest guys around.
I'm
glad you brought food. That's why.
Thank you.
He bought me. He's got a new restaurant in Penn Quarter called Del Campo that is getting rave reviews, and his new taqueria, Taco Bamba, in Falls Church is by consensus muy bueno. Thank you.
And, kind of offensive,
but we're going to get to you. Relax. Control yourself. Frederick and Francesco, why don't you guys sidle up to the mic there and let's talk a little. Frederick, really, you know, we've known you a long time and followed you across a couple of places. People for years in town said, where can I get good seafood? And there were really some just, you know, there were very few optimal choices. Mm-hmm. And then you opened Azure. Why seafood? Was that risky?
I kind of just like the thought of doing a full seafood restaurant in D.C. I think I wanted to kind of bring Brussels to D.C. where you have kind of innovative dishes, but simultaneously have also a large bar scene downstairs where you have, you know, approach to really classic dishes like deep fried calamari. We have a crab fest on a Wednesday night. And I think it's just kind of bring a good seafood restaurant and with refined taste. And it's we only use sustainable seafood as well.
How dare you mention deep-fried calamari, not bring a bucket load
I think
of it.
He brought other
Don't you
stuff.
Know this is a
no,
food
I think,
show?
I think David's question is, we were talking about it before. I mean, for years, you know, seafood restaurant was a style of restaurant that people opened, much like an Italian restaurant or a Mexican restaurant. And then that trend sort of went by the wayside. So what gave you the idea to open a restaurant that really focused on fish?
I think lots of majority of people are also more concerned about healthy food in general. And I think it's also that one is the approaches. I worked for about a year, about 15 years ago, in a seafood restaurant called Seagrill in Brussels. It was a 2-star Michelin restaurant. And I just enjoyed myself because it's very challenging to work with fish. It's very delicate. So you don't have really, you know, that extra
minute. Well, it's a lot easier once they stop moving around, I think.
In generally, especially when you deal with eel. Okay. They're kind of slippery. we do not serve that, though. I would love to. I think it's just it's for me, the challenge as well. I think it's also we can educate lots of people about sustainability about fish. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that we have some fishes on the menu like cobia and things like that people never really heard of. They never had, be able to taste before.
Well, later in the show, I'd like to talk about that. I want to talk a little bit more about how you're sourcing and how you're introducing the public to newer fish, which we need to be eating so that we don't overfish our seas. Well, let's bring Francesco up because he just brought over this gorgeous drink. Now you're doing, you came up with all the beverages.
Yeah,
at Azor,
just went in and helped chef to, recreate the cocktail menu that with cocktails that actually will match with the food.
Mm-hmm. So how'd you go about doing it? And what are we drinking?
So you have here Regina Marina. So we all name the cocktails after major boats and ships.
Okay.
Now here you're tasting the Regina Marina, which has gin. You have, Don Cicinfi fennel liquor, just muddled basil and strawberries with a touch of simple syrup.
Can you eat this?
Yes, you
berry?
Can. Yeah,
it's
berry.
Beautiful. It's a beautiful drink. So how did you go about coming up with the different drinks, other than naming them cleverly, to go with the different dishes?
It's since chef has a very Mediterranean approach. So I just want to introduce, fresh ingredients, just creating them in a way that matches with, any appetizers so people can actually enjoy them. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have to, drink wine or anything like that. You can still
have cocktails.
Still have a cocktail.
Okay.
Yummy.
Yeah, great.
All right. Well,
let's go to Vic.
It's your turn, Victor.
Okay. Up to the mic, Victor.
So what do you want to talk about first?
We
did last night.
What's that?
We talked about last night.
Already?
Let's talk
about me
Del
getting
Campo.
Crushed?
Huh? Yes. Cremated was
cremated.
The word.
That's nice.
You did not get cremated. Nobody knows what you're talking about. Last night, we were all at Charlie Palmer Steak. It was their big American Fair competition. Right. All the chefs were there competing. Chefs were partnered with... Stop laughing. Chefs
no,
were
you're
partnered...
giving me the hairy eyeball.
Chefs were partnered with... local chefs were partnered with Charlie Palmer group chefs from around the country.
It was really fun.
And you guys worked together and you worked with local product, right?
Yep.
And everybody had a good time.
And I was beaten by an escargot dumpling.
Beaten by an escargot dumpling. I don't think most people knew they were escargot, though. They were delicious.
They were good, though.
But what you brought today.
You can't ever beat a dumpling. I'm just saying.
I don't know.
No, it's very true.
I never tried. I think you can smack them around. You just can't beat them. all right. Well, let's talk about. You've got two new restaurants here, which must have been crazy getting both those things stood up.
We're in the middle of crazy.
Yeah. You're in the crazy business.
Right. Well, I think it's interesting because Frederick DePue has also, I want to get into that later. I mean, the two of you had twins. You're
something
doing
like
two
that.
Restaurants at the same time. And then when Fabio Trabocchi comes on, he's opening up two restaurants, Casa Luca and Fiola Mare. So why do this to yourself?
Well, Taco Bamba, the idea for Taco Bamba started a lot earlier, and it was just a longer process, and it kind of came together kind of at similar times. But unlike the other two chefs you mentioned, Taco Bamba is a very simple kind of street food taqueria, and it's...
Well, it's not. It's a family business. Your
it is.
Mom's involved.
My mom runs it with me right next to her store in Falls Church, so that helps. To have Plaza Latina right next door is really nice.
Well, for people who haven't had a chance yet to get out there, because it really did just open, tell us what they can expect at Taco Bamba.
So at Taco Bamba, we do kind of a two-sided menu, almost three-sided menu, I guess, where we do traditional tacos, non-traditional tacos, more chef-driven, fun tacos. We're going to be doing shrimp and sweetbread tacos. We're doing our Taco Bamba, which has chorizo, skirt steak, chicharrones, grilled guacamole. You've had this before, I would assume. I remember. And then we have another side of the menu where it's we call it tacos because they're not tacos.
Okay.
They're just tamales.
Are they made of
I'm
nose?
So witty, aren't I? It's unbelievable. So we're doing tamales and torta. The torta's, you know, it's like 4 pounds. It's huge. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's really lighthearted and fun, and I think the quality is my favorite part of it because it's simple, but it's really high quality stuff.
Well, so then let's now move over to the compo because this is a serious restaurant. Serious. It is. It's very serious. Yeah. I mean, you know, when you walk in, you know, you've got these massive chandeliers. It's such a beautiful space,
right?
Well, and it's a very it's a very interesting menu. I mean, you're doing something really different.
Thank you. Yeah. It's pretty much the polar opposite of what Frederick was talking about earlier. It's definitely dedicated to the asado and meat.
South
American
art
form of grilling, right?
Okay.
So it's basically, you know, a very elevated form of barbecue in my mind. Because asado is kind of like barbecue in that it's, you know, it's a verb, it's a noun, it's an... You know, it wears a lot of hats, but the style of South American grilling is kind of innately a little bit more refined to me. The flavors just the kind of richness and the simplicity of like the sauces that are very acid driven. It's a very simple but kind of novel thing to the area from my perspective.
Well, so for people like my husband who have not been into your restaurant yet.
I know, I'm still offended about this.
You don't have to be invited to a restaurant. You
course
just
you've
walked
been invited.
Were you invited both times?
No, I walked in. I'll tell you what I did.
Please,
a reservation.
Please. You're straining credibility right here. I'm incredulous. Or is that too big a word for this crowd?
No, come on.
No, you know, you have... The menu is more than just, you know, a bunch of grilled meats.
It is.
I mean, it's a lot more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sophisticated
so the,
than that.
The idea is that it's all everything on the menu touches or there's some ingredient comes off the grill or is smoked or charred or burned in some way from the ceviches through the salads. Now we have a section on the menu where we're doing a lot more street food. Mm-hmm. Where you know we're doing chicharrones. Our Peruvian chicken has been very popular, which has been a lot of fun to see.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also doing an asado bar, which completely takes the other side, where it's a much more modern approach to the asado. It's a 9-seat bar, reservation only, with a window into the kitchen.
What's an asado?
You just explained what the asado
thing.
Is.
I know. I was playing with it.
Can we rewind?
I was going to get really annoyed.
No. DVR? the asado bar is a completely different experience, where you kind of... interact with me, and I do small plates, you know, tasting menu type plates where we change up and kind of elevate the traditional asado.
Tell me about Street Food Fridays, because that looks...
Right, no, really so on every Friday at 11:30, we set up a little pseudo cart outside on the street, and we're slinging choripanes. And choripanes is a very traditional Argentinian street food where it's basically grilled chorizo, in a baguette with chimichurri, and you're about to mow down on some right now.
Like,
so, yeah.
I just don't want to get any drool in the...
No, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Gotta, that's part of the recipe.
Apologies to all our other guests.
Well, we have to take a quick break while he fills his mouth.
You should get a picture of this.
I know. I'll put that on video. We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to chat with you a little bit more because I, having been there for lunch, I thought your lunch menu was really interesting, and I want to talk about that just a little bit.
Thank you.
This is David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
You know, I voted for you.
Come celebrate Central Farm Market's 5th anniversary season with the freshest produce, dairy, baked goods, fresh fish, meats, poultry, and specialty foods around. Enjoy music, wine tastings, cooking demos and classes, and kids' activities at 2 great locations, Sundays 9 to 1 in downtown Bethesda and Saturdays from 9 to 2 in North Bethesda, Rockville. Come out and see for yourself why Washingtonian and Bethesda magazines hail the markets as the best in the metro area. To learn more and sign up for the weekly e-blast, visit www.centralfarmmarkets.com. The 2 central locations in downtown Bethesda and North Bethesda Rockville are kid-friendly and dog-friendly, have plenty of parking, and great food. For a listing of food artisans, events, and exact addresses, check out www.centralfarmmarkets.com. That's centralfarmmarkets.com. See you this weekend.
Running Start, the nation's premier political leadership group for young women, will host a Young Women's Political Summit July 12th through the 14th at Georgetown University. The summit showcases elected leaders and dynamic speakers for a weekend of inspiration and training. Girls and young women aged 14 through 35 are welcome. Tickets are only $150 for this spectacular opportunity to get a running start on leadership. Google Running Start Summit and sign up today.
In times of joy, in moments of grief, broadcasters come through, even when all else fails. Today, with more ways than ever to experience the moments that transform our lives, Americans still choose broadcast radio and television more than all other media combined. We are the local broadcasters of radio and television, reaching more people, touching more lives. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
All right, we're back on Foodie and the Beast, and we have a, I don't even know what to call this. This is like a horn of plenty of food that Vic Albizu's brought in, and Frederick Depew, and I am like a pig in heaven. I love it. So, you know, let me ask you something about smoking, because, you know, there was this thing, you know, a couple of years ago that smoking meats was bad for you and all that, and I think they've probably resolved that. Is there now going to be, well, they haven't resolved it. I think they have. But so is there, because smoking now is, I mean, we're starting to see restaurants popping up and people with smokers, and, you know, suddenly backyard smoking is huge. Is that a common thing?
Well, you know, the way we do it at Del Campo is a little different. I think, you know, we don't just use wood. We also use dried herbs, rosemary, thyme, oregano. Smart. And so it gives us really, when you walk into the restaurant, you already kind of start feeling that kind of vibe and smelling the dried herbs that have been burning. So it's a lot different than heavy wood smoke. It's a lot lighter.
The flavor of this is nuts. Yeah. It's delicious.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, and what I wanted to talk about a little bit, what I thought was really fascinating when I was at your restaurant for lunch, I think it's really hard for women to eat at major restaurants during lunchtime because it's all that's there for you is like a salad or salmon.
Right.
And I mean, I love to eat. I mean, I ate that chivito. I mean, you know that I can put it away, but I don't always want to
step on her foot and her mouth open.
No, I mean, I can eat a lot, but like, I don't always want to eat that way. But I thought you had a really lovely selection of thoughtful, composed salad dishes that were not just, you know, lettuce or fish. You know what I mean? They were interesting and they had layers and textures. And I thought that was smart.
Well, thank you. Yeah, the way we do things at Del Campo, I think, really speak to that because we can use seasonal vegetables and char them or grill them. And that gives it kind of a more substantial feel rather than just having a raw vegetable salad. Mm-hmm. Once it's grilled, once it's smoked, once it's seared, it has a different nuance to it. And you can build on that. So a lot of our salads, like you tried, have different textures. They have grilled textures, raw textures, fried sometimes. Mm-hmm. So all that adds to it. And the lunch menu has so many different things to offer as well. I mean, you can really have, you know, a full kind of nice, almost fine dining kind of feel, and then have more, you know, that street food feel.
So
as
he doesn't
well.
Know what a chivito is. Can you tell him?
You don't know what a chivito is?
Yeah, I dated
it's a little goat.
Yeah.
A little goat?
Yeah,
really?
A little chivito.
No, the chivito actually literally translates into a little goat, but for some reason.
Maybe I didn't.
What? Yeah, we should clear that up.
Yeah, I think you should rethink
that. She used to call me Dave. But that's another show.
Yeah, please. No, chivito is a traditional Uruguayan street food sandwich, which is seared steak, ham, mortadella, provolone, olive salad, fried egg, heart
it's
of
like
palm.
It's like this big.
You know what it is? It's a dagwood.
It's huge. Yeah. Oh, my God. It's
South
so
America.
Good.
Yeah, it's a South American dagwood.
Yeah. That's what
and
I
ate the whole thing. It was delicious.
All right, we're going to wrap. One quick thing.
But I want you to stay here. Don't go anywhere.
I'm going.
Real quick thing, because I think for a lot of people, grilling vegetables is still kind of still for a lot of Americans still seems like a weird thing. Mm. But what happens when they're grilled? It's almost like the sugars come out.
Right. There's a point in whenever
Look
you're cooking
learned.
Or grilling
Isn't
everything. He's amazing.
Oh, I love it when you condescend to me while we're on the air. That's great.
No.
Jeez.
It definitely changes and makes the vegetable much more complex when you can have different textures within one bite. Mm-hmm. So if you have some vegetables that are near raw and some vegetables that are almost overcooked or over-seared or over-smoked, it really balances out really nicely. And that's you know, that's how we kind of focus on
the maybe I'll get a chance to come to Del Campo sometime.
You have an open invitation.
Get in your car and go. Nobody's stopping you.
777 I Street, David.
Oh,
yes.
Well done. And where would I find it
in
on
Chinatown,
the web?
Chinatown.
In Chinatown on the web?
Yes, of course.
All right, stick around because we're going to want to come back to you. But let's go back to Frederick and Francesco.
Absolutely. Okay. Let's start with what this is, the latest drink that you poured.
Let's start with this.
No, we're starting. Uh-huh.
So
that's
called Santa Maria.
Okay.
You have mezcal with Don Chicho Figgy prickly pear.
It's a strong drink.
Aperol and grapefruit.
It's very good.
Go well with, you know, what you're going to taste right now.
Look at that.
The octopus, chef.
Well, chef, let's talk about this gorgeous canapé platter. Canapé platter that you put out for us. Canapé. I saw it in my head, but I didn't pronounce it right.
So the item that
Well, you're the epitome of...
Thank you. Sorry. Came out wrong.
So we have some cured sardines that we brought with a little frisée, and it's cured with bell peppers and tomatoes. In the middle, you have some olive oil poached.
Victor and I are just sitting here killing it.
Yes, please leave for
there
the others some.
There are other
people in the studio. No. May I just say the hell with the rest?
You can eat those.
Mm-hmm. But we have also like we olive oil poach the octopus, serve it peaches, and just quickly saute it in the back room here with the help of Vicar. And then we have a little tuna tartare on a toast and lemon cured.
How hard is octopus to cook? Because I've had it where it tasted like a Goodyear tire, and I've had it, you know, great octopus.
I think the best trick is to use olive oil. Just put it in and
to poach it.
In olive oil, because it's secure. It's you don't overcook it really, and that way, people put it in sous vide bags, make it much more harder. It's very cost effective, and just put it in olive oil, put it in the oven, and you cook it very seamlessly.
Now, are these the kinds of dishes that are currently on the menu?
Couple of them, yes. We have a tuna dish on the menu, a tartare. We have also a tuna sandwich for lunch. We have a really great sandwich lunch menu as well.
Mm-hmm. I think you need to be in front of the mic so we can hear you better. Thank you.
Well, I'm ooming over the octopus.
Well, I like the octopus. We serve it with some peaches, and I love the combination of sweetness with octopus as well.
And so you guys also do lunch at Azur. Tell us a little bit about the menu.
I wanted to do kind of fun lunch where we have crab cake Rubens on the menu, lobster rolls. And it's kind of very fun to do. We have a little crab soup, some vegetarian sandwiches as well, salads. And we have also, of course, our mussels available. And it's fun to see people coming in, just go for a quick sandwich. And other people really do it coming for a business luncheon. And
right.
They have kind of more access to the full menu where... have more elaborate dishes, and simultaneously people coming in for an iced tea and a good little crab cake Reuben, and it's kind of fun to see kind of all mixed together.
Well, it's actually interesting because you two are, a lot of restaurants have opened in the last couple months, and you two, both Del Campo and Azur, are one of the few restaurants that are serving lunch. There's not a lot of restaurants that serve
lunch.
Exactly,
and I think it's also that the whole neighborhood kind of cries for other restaurants as well for having a good lunch option.
Absolutely.
Because you can get away, I believe in both restaurants, you get both. You get a little more elaborate and simultaneous. You can go in for a good, fun, quick lunch as well. And I think giving the option to customers in general to have both options, can only be, positive for the business.
All right. I'm going to call a little time out because we're going to change the subject. Let's get the two Jims up to the microphones.
Please.
Jim Epstein of Blue Ridge Produce and Jim McCorder of Coastal Sunbelt, the two Jims. Jim, why walk up, Jim number two, have created a model for helping small farmers get a big marketplace, I guess is the way of putting it. And it's a really a fascinating combination of technology and just blood, sweat, and tears that you've made it happen. Why don't you, Jim Epstein, why don't you take it from the top and tell what Blue Ridge does and how you guys connected with Coastal Sunbelt.
Sure. Well, Blue Ridge Produce is a Virginia-based food hub. We aggregate produce from about 130 farms currently from throughout the state. And our intent is to move the needle. So we want to do it at scale and deliver to customers such as Coastal Sunbelt, who in turn will distribute to the individual restaurants and to all the customers.
But any little farmer who's got produce can come to you and find a bigger marketplace, right?
Correct. And most farmers have all said, we want to, you know, we're interested in growing. We're farmers. We're not marketers and we're not logistics people.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest challenge for most farms, small and medium size, are those two things. And so we do that for them. That is our job. We do the marketing, figure mm-hmm. out who the customers are, and we do the logistics. So in some cases, we send a truck down to a farm, and if they're small farms, we say, meet us at Tuesday at 10 o'clock, and we'll pick it up there. The larger farms typically have their trucks already, and they bring it to us. So, you know, the name of the game is efficiency in order to get from local farms to local customers.
All right, well, so let's... Jim, let's talk a little bit about Coastal Sunbelt and how you guys figure in on this, because you deliver to restaurants, you deliver to grocery stores. I mean, I've been out to the Coastal Sunbelt facility, and I mean, it was a complete and total education to me. I think we all have in our heads some sort of, you know, different story of how the food gets from the farm to our tables. But it was fascinating to learn how it really work. So I'd love to know a little bit about Coastal Sunbelt and how you work with somebody like Jim and this push for more local produce.
Well, before I answer that question, Nikki, I don't want to get dissed like Victor did here. So, David, you have a standing invitation to come visit us.
There you go.
At Coastal Sunbelt Produce.
But, and to Blue Ridge Produce.
My wife mistakes the title of the show for the truth. That's
okay. Now, to answer your question, we are, I think, the premier supplier of fruits and vegetables and dairy products to food service establishments in the Mid-Atlantic region. And we're very well known for the work that we do with a number of the hotel chains, the Four Seasons, the Ritz-Carltons, the Hyatts, the Hiltons, the Marriotts, things like that,
mm-hmm.
And some of the national chain restaurants. But the fact is, most of our customers, over 50%, are the white tablecloth, the fine dining, the types that are represented by the chefs in this room today,
mm-hmm.
and they are the ones that are really calling for the local product.
Okay.
We need sources, and we need consistent sources, and what we really appreciate is Jim, I guess, aggregating all the product. We pick up a lot of the product, the local product, where it's grown, and we have a lot of trucks on the road, but we can't stop at 130 farms, you know, that are maybe 200 or 150 miles away in Virginia. So that's where Jim comes in.
Mm-hmm.
He makes it so that the smaller farmers can get the product to us, and then we can get it to the customers.
See, that's why I was confused. I thought you said he was aggravating.
Aggravating.
Yeah.
That was last year, our first year, but he's going to do better
next
year.
Let me ask you a question. How do you guys, what is kind of the food chain of quality control? Because I think that's...
Well, that was going to be my question because I'm going to get more specific with it. Is it harder working with smaller farms that maybe can't deliver the consistency that you would find in a bigger farm? I mean, how do you work with that?
Well, we start by visiting every single farm before we start gathering food from them, and we make it very clear as to what our quality standards are. So that's sort of an upfront thing. And in fact, we've only had, I think, one or two shipments that we've had to send back in the little over 2 years that we've been in business. So I think that they get that.
Mm-hmm.
But you also mentioned about consistency. And so that what we are able to do by being the aggregator, we're able to provide to Coastal Sunbelt the not only the quality, but also quantity, which their customers need on a regular basis.
Right.
In other words, when they're ordering and they say, we want 80 cases of tomatoes and a farm can only deliver 60, well, then they get a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So we're able to figure out how to do the quantity that they need and then do it consistently.
Well, and then how does Coastal Sunbelt, how do you market this to the restaurants and the supermarkets? Is there a sort of a special thrust to
your... I mean, are you just shaking a bunch of hands? How do you do it?
Totally. No, there's a big call out there for local produce. I would say 20 years ago, mm-hmm. and certainly 10, the focus, the call was probably for organic. And that may well be the case among the consumer, but mm-hmm. I think that the restaurants are really into local, sustainable practices, know your farmer,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing.
And I think it's trickling down, you know, I mean, I think it starts with the chefs and then it trickles down to, you know, the layperson who mm-hmm. recognizes mm-hmm. that while organic has its qualities, it's really working, you know, local.
Well, it's true. I mean, organic product, a lot of it comes from 3,000 miles away
mm-hmm.
and there is no comparison to a product that comes from 3,000 miles away to corn or tomatoes that might have been on the plant this morning and they're on the table tomorrow.
The thesis
of our business is that we're getting produce from our farmers to customers in under 24 hours.
Wow. All right. Well, okay. We're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, I want to talk about more about how that happens.
You can still hear the corn screaming.
And I want to bring the chefs in and talk about how they work with you and how they make their demands and how you make it happen. Mm-hmm. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
Soldiers returning with traumatic brain injuries or other serious battle wounds often spend weeks or months in a VA hospital or other rehab facility. DVDs for Vets is collecting DVDs and portable players for distribution in our community and nationwide. Many of us take for granted our access to everyday enjoyments, and DVDs for Vets needs your help in giving these injured soldiers some diversions from the monotony of a hospital stay during recovery. To donate new or used DVDs or to learn more about this worthy cause, please go to www.dvdsforvets.org.
Hey, Mom, why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Escape the everyday to the close-by Early Mountain Vineyards in Madison, Virginia. A relaxing getaway just a short drive from D.C., it has an award-winning tasting room, breathtaking views of the Blue Ridge, and the best of Virginia wines, locally grown food, live music, and slow sunsets. Visit earlymountain.com or follow them on Twitter at Early Mountain. Mention Foodie and the Beast and this ad for a free flight of wines at your next visit.
For over a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserved. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by Geico and Federal News Radio.
The sardines are delicious.
Oh, so, wait, you're whispering the sardines.
Sardines are delicious.
All right, we're back on.
Now I'm not whispering. Now I'm saying it out loud.
You're talking. You know, see.
I know. Shh. I don't have to.
They want to hear me. We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We're talking to Jim Epstein of Blue Ridge Produce and Jim McWhorter of Coastal Sunbelt about how small farmers up and down the Blue Ridge are getting their local produce into big venues, really.
Are grocery markets also looking for local, or are you finding it more from the restaurant community?
Grocery stores are absolutely looking for it. Of course, Whole Foods is always known for doing work with local produce, but we're now starting to work with Harris Teeter.
Wow.
So that's very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Chipotle restaurant chain is another big one that's
Chipotle for you people that don't speak.
But they've been on the forefront of that, haven't
they? And this is an opportunity for us to work with them to get romaine lettuce into all 159 of their restaurants in the Mid-Atlantic region.
So, but since they have all those different restaurants, when they say local, they mean local for each regional restaurant, or how does that work? Do you know what I mean?
I think for them, their local is defined by 150 miles.
Okay.
You know, everybody defines it slightly differently. For me, quite frankly, local is we're getting produce from farm to customer in 24 hours.
Yeah. Okay.
That's, makes sense. To me, that's the definition. But there's no standard definition for
we finally found a market for our tomatoes, honey.
This is great. I'd like to chime in on that for a second. Different people's different definitions of local. I found out today just before the show that Jim here attended Princeton University, and about 3 years ago—
Rub it in.
No, I'm really going to rub it in. They're a customer of ours, and about 3 years ago, we went and made a presentation to them.
Well, who, Princeton University?
Yes, and they have a committee, and they're really into local and green and things like that, and they kind of vetted us. And we have a very strong local program. So I went there with confidence, and I told them all about it, and told them about Blue Ridge and blah, blah, blah. But Jim's alma mater will not recognize his product as local because they're up in New Jersey and he's down in the Shenandoah Valley. So they won't buy his product, or at least they won't give us brownie points for it.
I told you to go to Towson, but you wouldn't.
we had to hook them up with some guys in New Jersey and Delaware. So people, institutions.
But I think that makes sense. I mean, if they want local, then it makes sense to bring them a product that is local as
possible.
It does.
They
want to
support their own economy, mm-hmm. not the economy, you know, hundreds of miles or thousands of miles away. Mm-hmm. And they want to reduce the carbon footprint. So hauling it from the Shenandoah Valley up there doesn't do quite as much as if it's grown in Delaware.
Well, I have one more question, and then unfortunately we do have to wrap it up. But my question is, with the explosion of farmers markets around the region, I mean, it's become really big in this area. How does that affect your business and how you work with chefs? Because the chefs go to the farmers markets too. How does that affect the kind of work you're doing?
Well, farmers markets don't fit our business model, obviously. Right. We are a distributor, and they are direct to chef or direct to consumer. But the fact of the matter is we support them anyway. Mm-hmm. You're familiar with Fresh Farm Markets, who run maybe a dozen in this area, and they do a really great job. And every year they have a fundraising gala. Mm-hmm. I think it's usually in November. And Coastal Sunbelt steps up and sponsors year after year because some of the same producers selling at those markets sell to us as well. And it's really important for us to keep those guys, to keep them happy, quite frankly.
So let me step back for just a second. So the total food industry in the Delmarva region, all aspects of the food business, is about $16.8 billion per year.
Okay.
Of that, it's in the low single digits. It's actually local. And of that, you'll find a very small percentage of it is actually the farmers market. So in terms of the total food system, farmers markets are tiny. However, they serve an incredibly important role in that they educate consumers about the value and the quality and the taste of local, and they connect to farmers. And then that spills out into where they shop and what they shop for and when they go to the restaurant.
Well, it's how it becomes a trend. I mean, it's how people, you know, it initially becomes a trend and then it becomes the norm, you know? I mean, that's like, you know, farm-to-table dining, you know, that used to be a buzzword, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. Now when somebody says it, you're like, yeah, so what? I mean, everybody does it, which is great. But it goes from a trend to being the norm, and I think that's, you know, an educated consumer, which is what you want.
We're moving towards the normalizing of local.
Great.
Absolutely.
Okay.
All right. Well, guys, I think we're going to have you back at some point to talk more about this. This is great, but thanks for coming in. We're going to ask you to give up the microphone to Fabio Trabocchi. Fabio? So I'm in heaven because I've got two Italians in the studio today. What do I say? Bentornato, see? To both of you.
Thank you for having me on.
All right. So where's Luca? We're expecting Luca too. You know,
your son.
Luca worked very hard last night, so he's
almost asleep, sleeping it off.
But I can answer every question for Luca on Luca's behalf, I guess.
Okay. Okay. Will you use a 9-year-old's voice?
I can try to do that. I don't know if I sound that cute, though.
Well, you know, I Nikki's got all the serious business questions, but you're opening up Casa Luca, which is obviously an homage to your son, and you're known as a fine dining, you know, chef with tremendous skills in that area, and you're kind of bringing it sort of down a step for more kind of homey, comfort Italian food, it sounds like. Is that an accurate way of describing it?
It is accurate, yes. But, you know, I'm a fine dining chef, accurate. But I haven't grown up on fine dining food, nor my family. So really is an homage to Luca being my son, but it's also a type of food that is rooted into the generations of my family.
So let's talk about that.
Well, so let's start. I mean, you're calling it Casa Luca because your son wants to get into cooking, or he is cooking?
It is cooking. I guess it's just intrigue about, you know, be able to be out of the house and don't be under the surveillance of a babysitter and be able to hang out with the grown-ups.
Well, I mean, that's such an opportunity. He's lucky that it's something he really wants, he's interested in.
It is very interested, yes. Well, I guess that's going to make him street smart very soon.
Well, is the formal name Casa Luca Vino e Cucina? I mean, is it because it's wine and it's kitchen and it sounds very homey.
It is very homey.
Well, is it like trattoria? I mean, is it like a trattoria or an osteria?
It is an osteria. Mm-hmm. And the intention is solely to make it very homey. It's like, you know, avenue into our house. Every recipe we do is
I'm waiting for that invitation.
Okay. Oh, my God.
Do you need one?
Yes, he does. Haven't you been listening?
No, not Casa Luca. I'm talking about your house.
Oh.
In Italy. Let's go there.
So So let's talk about this osteria and its concept and what people can look forward to. I mean, you're opening in just a couple of days.
Just a couple of days away. We're opening with friends and family last night for the first time. And
how'd it go?
Very good. Mm-hmm. Very good. You know, I was very good the first night of friends and family can go, I guess. But the concept is rooted into traditions of my family. My father was a farmer, and my grandfather was a farmer. So you talked about trends and going to a fresh market. For for most Italians, that's rooted into our lifestyle.
Right.
We don't do that because it's trendy, I think, is being planted into our DNA. But that's just the way the life is. You know, mm-hmm. we eat strawberry in May or in April because they're good then. We don't test them in December and things of this nature. But back to the food. Really is...
No more slamming the United States and how we
stupid
eat our strawberries.
Back to the food. It's recipe from my home, my mm-hmm. recipe that my father cooked for me and things of this nature.
Well, wait.
No. Wait. Here, okay. Because your region, I mean, if you ask people about the food in Tuscany or the food in Veneto or, you know, right. Veneto, that, you know, they're going to have a sense of it. But your region is not on the beaten path, really. So talk about the cuisine that's...
Well, Marche has both coastal and land cuisine, so to speak. Has a lot of similarity to Umbria, Tuscany, all the usual suspects, I would say, out of our country. It's east of Rome, is on the Adriatic coast, mm-hmm. and we have an abundance of seafood as much as, you know, product from
Frederick's
from the
taking
farms.
Notes. Over
right,
there,
he's so. Like, wait, seafood? Did somebody say fish?
But what is it that is the kind of the quintessential taste from La Marche?
Well, you know, it's home cooking, it's a lot of pastas. We tend to stuff anything, you know, from pigs to lambs to a pocket of pasta with any possible filling you can imagine. It's also fine selections of cured meats, lots of vegetables, and yes, of course, seafood.
And is the sauce based, more tomato-based or more...
Mostly tomato-based,
tomato-based? Because,
yes.
You know, different parts of Italy base their sauces very differently.
Well, we're in the middle, you know, so we have mm-hmm. both a little bit of the north and a little bit of the
you
south.
You feel strongly both ways. What? Talk about the menu at the new restaurant.
The menu will have, some selections of cured meats and cheeses. Mm-hmm. Some of the cured meats that have been made specifically for us. I'm bringing a spreadable salami that comes from my hometown. It's called Ciauscolo. We also have our house-made pastas of different interpretations. They're all regional Marche recipe, and most of them that could be found on my cookbook.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea
Which
of the cookbook I did...
And have cooked out of.
Just so to describe the region, but also to put all the family recipe into one book.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a lot of family sharing dishes, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Really the spirit of home cooking and conviviality and to be able to share.
So... What are your instructions to a guy like Jeff Fail, who's putting together the beverage profile?
Does Jeff need a lot of direction?
Well, does he know? I mean, because
no, Jeff doesn't need a lot of direction.
Do you know Jeff?
I mean is, I do know. Yes, intimately.
Okay.
He's at Fiola. He's at a fine dining restaurant. And how do you tell him to kind of relax a little and bring it down? Not down market, but down.
Well, Jeff did that beautifully. We're very lucky to have him. And he certainly set the standard very high for the Bar of Fiola. And now we focus on old world Amaro and spirits that are coming from my region in the south. And he played with those.
I see Francesco's eyes go up. Did somebody say Amaro? Because that's what he's pouring.
Look, timing is everything, isn't it, baby? Look at that. I just happened to have some Amaro here. All right. And your son is 9 years old, and obviously he's... playing with the idea of following in your footsteps. Is he going to have a role at the restaurant?
Well, you know, first of all, he's our mascot in the kitchen.
Okay.
And is the go-to guy. And, you know, he likes to help. Honestly, I'm always surprised and pleasantly surprised how much he likes to just sit there and, you know, cut tomatoes, squeeze oranges.
He caught the bug.
Something like that.
That's great.
In Italy.
There's a sense of work ethic that I see blossoming very early. Hopefully he's going to be smarter than me and don't become a chef.
Well, I was just going to ask, I mean, in Italy, as in much of Europe, I mean, apprenticeships started at a young age. I mean, did you start cooking at a young age?
12.
You started at 12.
Yeah.
And with the goal of becoming a chef?
Sort of.
That's not a very good answer. Well,
cooking with your dad. I mean,
it just happened to be that way. Yes.
Okay.
Your dad was a farmer. Obviously, he would bring stuff in from the fields and cook
it up.
Well,
all of our son-in-law, they would start at home on a Saturday before Sunday. So it's one day field trip to every different farmers until the car could not take it anymore because we were packing lamb, chickens, eggs, vegetables, and so forth. And at the age Luca, I was choosing whatever animals we would have had for Sunday. My dad will wake up at 5 a.m. in the morning on Sunday and start to cook. I will be awakened by the smell of sauce and roast and maybe happen to make a cappuccino.
Well, my dad did the same thing. He was making Pop-Tarts in the
toaster. We're going to the deli to buy smoked fish.
But our Sunday meals, they will last 6 hours. And I mean, we'd break sometime every now and then.
Right, we have to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll give people the 411 of where you are and when they can start dining with you. And we want to just touch on a little bit, Fiola Mare, which is coming up soon. This is David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
It's not always easy being a dad.
When's the fairy princess coming?
Any minute now.
What? What do you mean she's not coming?
But it's always worth it.
It's a fairy princess!
It is I!
Grooms! Zinkelbell! Yay!
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life.
I know it's really you, Drew. I'm just pretending for the other kids.
Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4-DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Come see high-profile D.C. politicos face off on the tennis court in the second annual Washington Castles Charity Classic, Thursday, July 18th. Members of Congress and administration officials join local celebrities and some of the world's best tennis players, including Martina Hingis, in a bipartisan world team tennis format match with 100% of ticket proceeds benefiting charity. For more information, visit WashingtonCastles.com or call 202-4-TENNIS.
Are you looking to go abroad and make a difference? Consider volunteering or studying abroad on a YFU gap year to Thailand, Romania, or Ghana. Earn course credit, live locally, and become a global citizen. YFU offers gap year as well as summer, semester, and year-long programs to 40 countries. Call 1-800-TEENAGE or visit YFUUSA.org to learn more about Youth for Understanding study abroad programs. Change your life. Change the world. Youth for Understanding.
Running Start, the nation's premier political leadership group for young women, will host a Young Women's Political Summit July 12th through the 14th at Georgetown University. The summit showcases elected leaders and dynamic speakers for a weekend of inspiration and training. Girls and young women aged 14 through 35 are welcome. Tickets are only $150 for this spectacular opportunity to get a running start on leadership. Google Running Start Summit and sign up today.
All right, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and we're talking to Chef Fabio Trabocchi. You know him from Fiola and the wonderful excellence of Fiola and Maestro, but now he's opening Casa Luca, which will be as excellent, but a little bit more homey, is a way of putting it. Anything special on the menu there that people will find surprising?
The show will try the Ciauscolo salami, which I think is something
that's a spreadable salami.
Spreadable, new on the League of Cure Meats and the ravioli San Leo that we're doing. There's also a classic dish, home dish from the Abruzzi region. It's called Scrippellenbus. It's a savory crepe that is served over a double chicken stock with mushroom and smoked ricotta over the top.
Oh, now, fascinating!
Do you discover these on your trips back home or
no,
are
no,
there distributors?
This is what I grew up with.
So you went back to it. That's really...
And the biggest challenge there is to keep it authentic and real and don't elevate them to another level.
Just to keep them simple.
Exactly.
It's hard to
keep
them
original.
Simple.
Yeah, well, every chef will try to go in and do something different to it. But I think the spirit of Casa Luca was to keep them as authentic as possible.
Sounds like so much fun.
But then now, in a couple months, you're going to up the ante again and go Fiola Mare. Around Christmas time. Because we were talking, Frederick has opened two restaurants, Vic has opened two restaurants, and now you are opening two restaurants almost at the same time. How are you able to balance the two while running another restaurant.
It works very well for my diet.
Good. You're not on, what's Maria, it called?
So, Maria is so happy.
So Viola Mare is going to be
for hope.
Seafood.
You're not on the seafood. Fit for Hope?
No.
Pat for Hope? What is it calling it?
Frederick heard you were coming in here. He got a rope and some tape, and he's got his trunk open. So you know, watch out. So what is going to be?
I hope the car is very fast.
what's the profile, of aside from seafood, of Viola Mare? What's, you know, what to look forward to?
It would be seafood, and it's really a spirit of a restaurant on the Mediterranean, Adriatic Sea, where, and then we're lucky that we get to see at least a fraction of water, the Potomac, by every window of the restaurant. This is going to be our very first full build-out restaurant, soup to nuts, and we have a state-of-the-art open kitchen, seafood counter, and the entire patio over the corner of 30 and 3050 on K Street.
Wow.
Well, and for that restaurant,
good location.
Are you looking to serve Italian fish, or are you looking to serve fish from all over the world?
I mean, well, the quality of seafood will come from all over the world, to answer your question, and but the spirit of the cuisine will be Italian.
Okay.
So we have preparation of crudo oysters. There will be pasta preparations with any sort of type of seafood you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And then grilled fish items, all fish served table side, and also seafood that is plated, filleted off the bone with sauces and anything you can imagine that it can be on the world of seafood.
And will it be a more fine dining experience?
To the level of Fiola.
To the level of Fiola. Okay,
but
terrific.
I don't know how I could still possibly be hungry after eating all this, but you just made me hungry. So
oyster do that.
Let's make sure everybody knows where Casa Luca is, because you're I don't know where exactly the address is on New York Avenue, but you're part of the sort of the renaissance of that stretch of New York Avenue.
It's 1099 New York Avenue. It's between K and New York Avenue. On 11th Street.
Right, not far from Brasserie Beck, right?
That's correct.
Like up the street. Yeah. Just a little bit. Right. Great location. Well, best of luck July 5th.
Thank you.
We'll look forward to joining you there.
Thank you, and thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for joining us.
I'll be the first one in line.
All right, Frederick, I'm going to bring you back up, please, chef. So I wanted
to... Look, he's got a seafood boxing glove on.
Well, you mentioned in the beginning of the show, when you talked about your seafood, you mentioned that you were going to be doing it sustainably, or that you do it sustainably.
Yeah.
And is that, given all of our talk earlier about local produce, is that very important to you?
It is very important. I think as chefs, it's our responsibility to also kind of inform and educate people what's out there. And I think... by creating that, people have knowledge of it's not okay to have always the same fish. And I think it's also to make them discover different products. Because everybody knows halibut, everybody knows salmon, and they're always looking back to those things, scallops. And it's amazing when you have it on the menu. Those are the three items that are literally going off. It's every single ticket, halibut, scallop, and then you have very few times a cobia or different items that you have on the menu. So it's very interesting to see. So sometimes I like to pull some very favorite dishes off to push the other ones out. And the people are like, oh, I never had that when passing by the kitchen. That was fantastic. The texture of this fish is unique. I never had it before. We have a white salmon now. It's a wild Alaskan wild salmon that is just spectacular in flavor. And I don't think that many people even had it within this room.
I would
here.
Like to try it for the halibut.
There you
thank
go.
Thank you very
and
much.
And I think that's
I've been waiting
where,
all show.
And so that's where I have my fun out of it. When people come down and they say, you know what, I never had this before. This is so unique. And I think that's why it drives us as well. And the freedom to create, take those products and then to do something with it, it's just fun.
Well, do you think the consumer is more educated? I mean, do you think the diner who's coming into your restaurant is willing to try new fish and knows about sustainability and the necessity behind it?
I don't think that they know per se about sustainability, but I think they definitely have more knowledge of what products are about. I think people are made more and more curious to know where the products are coming from. And the other restaurant table as well, what we do, we work only with local farmers for all our fresh products. And it's fun to see, you know, a farmer come in with literally 20 boxes of products that were, you know, grown locally. Last week I had one of my first tomatoes. It's just blood red. Just cut it up with some fresh burrata, avocado, and I had a blast. And same thing with in seafood. It's like when the product's coming in, it's just unique and
well,
freedom.
What's interesting is, I wonder whether people who are used to going to the big supermarkets and getting big ag produce in particular, you know, it's a treat for them to come to a restaurant and get something real and local and that has a totally different flavor, even though it looks like the same tomato, what that does in terms of demand there, you know.
Well, I think that's what we were discussing earlier. Clearly, that's the demand that goes right